Welcome back to a lingering Super Bowl hangover edition of Believe in 49ers, presented by the Believe Podcast Network and Bet Online. I am your host, Tommy Call III. You can follow me on Twitter at Tommy_III. That is triple I for the third. You can also catch all of my written work about the Niners via USA Today's Niners Wire. So if you're interested in all of that, you know where to go. All right, let's get into it. We are 5 days out from the Super Bowl. It feels like it was a month ago and it was yesterday, all in the same time. Like I said, it is a hangover, but not a fun hangover, nothing to be proud about the next day. And before we kind of move on from the Super Bowl and turn our attention to the offseason, we need kind of a proper memorial for the 49ers Super Bowl run. And after marinating for the past few days, there's still some things to talk about, along with the news of Kyle Shanahan's firing of Steve Wilks, the looming drama surrounding Brandon Ayuk's contract, and as we record, we just got some news. Jimmy Garoppolo will be looking for a new home this offseason. And to talk about all that and more, I tapped an old friend, my guy, Jose Sanchez of Sports Illustrated's All 49ers Fan Nation. Does a ton of amazing work around the 49ers. I feel like every time I open up Twitter, I see him posting a new piece on the 49ers. He is the deputy editor working with my guy, Grant Cohn, another former Press Democrat alum. Even though me and Grant never worked together, I still kind of feel like I'm under the Grant Cohn coaching tree, if that makes sense. And Jose, back in the day, a lot of people don't know this, but now they will. Back in the day, when me and Jose were both kind of cutting our teeth in this game, usually kind of sat next to him in the press box, always enjoyed talking ball with him back then. And now we're going to do that here on Believe in 49ers for you. But before we get to Jose, I have a quick message from our friends over at Bet Online. Bet Online continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with live in-game betting, contests, and all the player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices. Head to Bet Online today to become part of the team. And remember to use the promo code BLEAVE, BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, the game starts here. All right. Now, you just heard me talking about him. To welcome on my friend Jose Sanchez, you can follow him on Twitter, J Sanchez, SanchezFN. Jose. That was a lot. You got to sit through that whole intro. How did I do? Do I get a grade? You're one of the few guests that got to see the full performance.
Oh, wow. I'm one of the first. If I'm one of the first, that's an A plus then. That's an A plus. Now your future guest can start to be a little harsh, because by that time you'll be seasoned. And if it's still, they can be the judge after a bunch of, they know what the data is, what the sample size is, and how to judge the rest of it.
I felt a little pressure with you watching me there. All right, Jose. So like I said, we're 5 days out from the Super Bowl. How are you feeling? How are you doing? What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that should have been the Niners Super Bowl victory. I get that was Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, Travis Kelce, the Chiefs. I get it. But that was your Super Bowl. That was yours. I do not care like how great the defense of the Chiefs showed up that day. You're Colin Shanahan. The strength is in your offense. Figure it out. All right, figure it out, and your guys need to execute and play better, and it clearly was just not enough. And the funny part is, even though it wasn't enough, you were still in the game all the way until the end. It took overtime for you to lose. So to me, it's like, you had all the pressure in the world. This is your Super Bowl. Everyone kept saying, like, this is a down year for Mahomes, down year for the Chiefs. Like, they're kind of not lucky to be there, but it's like, there's no better moment for you guys to win it. The NFC was weak. You finally have your quarterback. This is your best offense under Shanahan. Get it. Go out there and take it. That's something that all the players said post-games. Like, Super Bowls are taken, not won or given. And they definitely were not taking it. The defense showed up, which was the crazy part to me. I thought the defense was going to be one of the reasons why they lost, and they weren't. And I get the final two drives, right? Final drive in regulation, final drive in overtime. Like, they collapsed. But, hey, you tell any team in this league, hey, we're going to hold Patrick Mahomes to 16, 19 points in regulation. He's not going to do anything for about three and a half, three-thirds of a quarter. Everyone's signing up for that. Like, hell yeah, everyone's signing up for that. That was just insane to me. Like, how many chances the Niners had, like, the times the defense tried to give them momentum on offense, and they just couldn't do it. And, you know, props up to the Chiefs, but look, usually the 49ers, you guys should have executed better, and Shanahan should have had it figured out, and they didn't.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that's really going to, like, make this loss especially sting, because even dating back to 4 years ago, you can talk about, like, Jimmy Garoppolo missing throws, the interception. This one felt more obtainable to that one. And I think the fact, all the stuff that you brought up, that they kind of took the Chiefs' best shot, made some mistakes, and still had a chance to win this game. And kind of the more I think about this game, I do think a lot about Patrick Mahomes. And I think, you know, I've been asked about this a lot myself over the last week. It's like, I feel like we're just witnessing one of the best players of our generation in Patrick Mahomes. 49er fans have seen it twice. You've been there twice in person at two of these Super Bowls where Patrick Mahomes did go out there and take it. I kind of do lean a little bit towards Patrick Mahomes went out and won this game versus the 49ers blew it. Am I crazy for saying that? Is there like a percentage number you'd put the blame on where Patrick Mahomes is just great and he went out and won that thing, or the 49ers actually blew this?
Yeah, it's a little hard to say. Like, I think the chance that they won it is kind of blown, but in terms of, like, you know, people say another 10-0 lead that Shanahan blew, and it's like, all right, relax. The 10-0 lead came in the second quarter. Yeah. Like, if there's no such thing as the lead being safe in the second quarter. If that was the case, they should have lost to the Lions. So to me, that's not really applicable in the situation. It was 4 years ago, right? When there's 6 minutes left and you're up by 10, like, that was embarrassing. But this one is just, I just mean, like, collectively, like, your chance was kind of blown. Like, everywhere was, like, destroyed. And yeah, Mahomes went out there, won it for sure. But you're the ones that gave him that chance, right? You had plenty of drives in the first, second, third, and fourth quarter to really put your foot on their necks, and you just didn't. Like, no lead is safe, whether it's 7 points, 10 points against Mahomes. You guys gave him that life. And honestly, from the very moment that I saw that the 49ers failed to convert on 3rd and 4 at the 2 minute warning of the fourth quarter, it was pretty much written to me. And I said it in a video too, I think on one of my articles, like, Patrick Mahomes, 2 minutes left, two timeouts, has the field to work for a field goal or a touchdown to win or tie the game. I've seen this movie before. Did the 49ers just blow the chance to win it? I think they did. And they did. And sure, they went to overtime. But you give Mahomes, you give the great stud life. That's like, oh my God, I've been stinky all game. Now I have a chance to really pull out and win this. Like, no, you guys blew it. You guys blew it in that sense. So yeah, it's a sense of Mahomes definitely won it because you gave him so many opportunities for like 80, after the 80, first 80, 95% of the game that you could have done it.
Yeah, I mean, I think... what really kind of stands out to me, and especially after rewatching it, I'm just shocked that once they completed that late pass with, you know, seconds on the clock to Travis Kelce, and he got them up to the, you know, basically the goal line. And I was like, Patrick Mahomes, two chances at the end zone. You know he's going to throw it to the end zone at least twice. I thought the 49ers dodged a crazy bullet with that, just even forcing it to overtime and him not getting there. But yeah, I also, as much as I think the 49ers kind of are going to be, you know, hurting from this one, and there is a lot of places of blame that we can talk about, but they're also, I think we do need to give a little credit to Patrick Mahomes, because this guy is just the best thing going. And I think you look around the NFL now and he's enemy number one. If we're going to win the Super Bowl, it basically runs through him, because we've seen this year how bad the Chiefs looked, and still they just absolutely rolled in the playoffs. But talking about that blame, Kyle Shanahan's been under a lot of fire, and I think it's fair. I think a lot of it's fair, but I also kind of sometimes feel the need to defend Kyle Shanahan, because he still took, you know, the last pick in the draft to the Super Bowl in his second season. I thought this was probably one of his better seasons from start to finish as a coach. I thought as a play caller specifically, I thought he looked really well throughout the year. Obviously, you know, things went weary in the Super Bowl. In terms of confidence, Jose, because I think this conversation is going to linger deep into next season, and it's just something that when you hear the name Kyle Shanahan, you think about these kind of Super Bowl failures. What does, you know, Kyle Shanahan have to show to give you confidence he can win a Super Bowl? Because the last two attempts now with this guy, I mean, he's had significant leads. I know it came early, but that, I mean, the 49ers are essentially spotted 10 points in this game and couldn't get it done. do you have any confidence left at this point? I mean, what's it going to take? What, because I think there does need to be growth. And I know that kind of sounds crazy from like a veteran coach that we've seen take his team to multiple Super Bowls, but what growth needs to happen from Kyle Shanahan to like bring you confidence that he can actually get this done? Because even if the 49ers find themselves in the same position next year playing for the Super Bowl, you know, there's going to be so many people out there being like, oh God, here we go again. You know, Kyle Shanahan's going to blow this.
Yeah, my confidence is definitely taking a hit. Look, I think he's going to win one at some point in his career, but in terms of like with the 49ers, the next year or two or even three, it's definitely dwindled because it starts with how do these guys willfully pick themselves up? Like, how do they pick up the shattered pieces and glue them back together and really like, full steam ahead next season? Because at this point, it's like, what about, who cares about the regular season? I fully anticipate the Niners going 10 wins and just trying to make a run in the playoffs. Because at this point, who cares about the regular season, the 49ers? Just get in and make a run. In terms of Super Bowl, what I need to see from him more is I kind of want to probably see a little bit more, better of a straight up outright drop back passing game. Because I feel like that offense, if it's just predicated one dimensional in that facet, that it's not necessarily like the upper echelon of offenses. Whereas like, unless the running game is really, really clicking, then he can like kind of tie that together and make his passing offense better. Cause he does a lot of running out of formations and pass formations on the same look. And if the run's not there, no one's threatened by it and they're locking it up, then it's like, okay, well, what else is there? He's going to pass it. So I kind of felt like in that sense, they were doing that. Now, Spagnuolo did a lot in that game to really, like, mix up the coverages and really, like, confuse Purdy. So I think in that sense, like, Shanahan will have a better shot because hopefully Purdy learns from that. But I think Shanahan is just trying to figure out a way, like, identify what that they're doing that and know the plays that are safe to get away from that situation. Because, like, that third and fourth play in overtime, right, how they allow the free rusher. Like, why is Shanahan calling a play that pulls the center that's designed to leave a free rusher? Like, that's a fact. Like, that's Jeff Schwartz said it. Like, everyone, like, that's a fact that a free rusher was designed. Actually, that's something the Niners, Kyle Shanahan, have done for most of the season. There's, like, probably a couple plays a game where he allows a free rusher and it's on the quarterback to get the ball out of his hands. But in that sense, it's like, yo, they've been blitzing you like crazy. The pressure overall has been crazy. Why would you not, like, factor that in? Why would you not do that? So that, to me, was confusing that he didn't do that because, again, the quarterback of the 49ers offense under Kyle Shanahan is not allowed to do the protections or reset any of that. It resides with the center. And if he's not able to do that, if you're not able to call the right call, then, so to me, it's about adapting better to what the defense is doing and then trying to polish up more of your drop back passing game. You have the quarterback to do it. So now it's no excuses for you why you can't improve in that area.
Yeah, and it seems like, as much as you just mentioned, Spagnuolo confused Brock Purdy, it seemed like Kyle Shanahan was confused as well, seeing all that cover zero, seeing all the blitzing. You're talking about the play calling. It was wonky. It was some of the, throughout the playoffs, especially against Detroit with the lack of Christian McCaffrey and things, it was like his two worst games he probably called back to back in the biggest moments of the season. And I think that kind of adds fuel to this like narrative surrounding Kyle Shanahan. And I think all the muster of like, he's this hot young amazing offensive play caller has kind of gone away. Now you look at him as the guy that can't do it. Kind of putting, you know, the nail in the coffin on this Super Bowl here, moving on, because the drama did not stop with the 49ers loss on Sunday to the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl. There's an interesting offseason ahead for us here in the Bay Area and anyone that covers the 49ers. And some of that news started already is with the departure of Steve Wilks, the defensive coordinator. And Jose, I kind of want to tell you my opinion, because you and I have both probably listened to way too many Kyle Shanahan press conferences to count. And it was a funky start with the Steve Wilks era from basically day one, when they announced, hey, we want to kind of keep this Seattle cover three system here in the Bay Area, where Steve Wilks wanted to do things differently. And then I don't know, like I said, we've listened to so many Shanahan pressers. I don't know if I've ever heard Kyle specifically kind of call out a coach or a elite assistant like he did with Wilks multiple times during the season. I mean, after the Minnesota loss, he brought up the coverages. There was obviously a lot of drama. We talked about it here on this podcast of if he's going to come down from the booth, if he's going to stay up there. He obviously came down to the field, and it was just funky from the jump. And I don't really think that decision to kind of move on from Wilkes was based strictly on the Super Bowl. I kind of felt like this thing was festering for a little while. Do you think the exit from Steve Wilkes was kind of dead on arrival, or do you lean more towards this was the Super Bowl scapegoat?
There's no way that was a Super Bowl scapegoat. I mean, the defense was the best part of that game, the only reason why they're in it. Yeah, this has been something that's been brewing. And you notice the only ones who are saying it's a scapegoat are, like, the people who haven't watched the Niners every week. Like, the national people. Local people was like, oh, yeah, this was coming. And national people were like, what is he doing? It's like, okay. Like, this is where you got to get most of your sources from, people who actually watch or pay attention. But, yeah, it really kind of...
Or even listen to Kyle Shanahan for that.
Or even listen. And it really, like, the first domino got pushed was that Minnesota game, like you said. And I will say that I kind of felt like he was... That time he was kind of being scapegoated, to be honest. Because I remember it's like, yeah, the defense being off. And initially I kind of fell into that trap. Like, yeah, the defense has to be better because in my head they should. But you look up on the scoreboard, it's like, wait a second. They're only allowing, like, 20 points. Like... That's pretty good. Like it's not elite, but it's pretty damn good. What about the offense? Often look to me, the media, the pressure has always been, the strength of the first time of the 49ers in years under Shanahan has been in their offense, whereas years prior, it's always been the defense, right? So this year, it was like, why aren't you guys putting up more points? So I kind of felt like he got scapegoated during that stretch, the three-game losing streak. But ultimately, like, it was just clear, like, no one was in sync. The players didn't speak, like, ad nauseum about him like they would about Saleh or D'Amico Ryans. So I think once you got the players already like, what the hell is this guy like? You got Shanahan having to call him out and then essentially indirectly forcing him to do a public apology at his own press conference, Steve Wilkes. So that was like, okay, something's weird here. And then the Detroit Lions game is weird because, you know, the defense, lack of effort, poor scheme, and running a ball towards... Not even just that game, the last three games as well, in terms of the ones that mattered. So, you know, it was just wonky for the last, 3 months. And it was pretty much, you know, it was predictable. It really was. Now, I think what also, like, kind of factored into the players not buying in, like, maybe they would have bought in if it was consistently good. But, you know, the first five games of the season, the defense was fine. No one was complaining. The defense was awesome. It really did just take, like, some of the players, like, once they hit that rough pass, like, the players started turning on him. And I think where your point stands in terms of was he day one dead on arrival, kind of, is the fact that he's an outsider, right? Who's been the defensive coordinator since 2017? Everyone in-house. First it was Saleh, D'Amico Ryans, linebacker coach, then promoted. And all these players have pretty much been a continuity figure. They've been together. They've been in structure together for years. And then you got this outsider who's trying to learn your guys' language, and he's trying to probably do his own thing, and your player, like Fred Warner, is like, nah, I don't mess with that. Like, what the hell is this? And that's why I think why he got kind of forced downstairs to the field is that was kind of a player advocacy, to be honest. So, yeah, I think they just kind of viewed him as an outsider. So, to me, if you're looking forward, like, do you go internal, and then who?
Yeah, I think this the conversation for the next defensive coordinator, since it was so weird with Wilkes, because... I want to say this too. I don't think Steve Wilkes is like a poor football mind. I don't think he's like a bad NFL coach by any means. I don't think he doesn't deserve to be a defensive coordinator, doesn't deserve to be a head coach. We obviously saw what he did in Carolina. This guy has had success pretty much everywhere he's gone to an extent, and defensively at least. And I don't think, you know, Wilkes, like he's going to go somewhere else and probably become a defensive coordinator pretty quickly here or have some higher rank in some sort of organization. It just was weird for all the things you had just mentioned. And so I do think it kind of starts with the Chris Kocurek, and goes from there. If he wants the job, I do think they want to strive for continuity just because of all the things you had just mentioned. But moving on to kind of, I think, the figurehead of the 49ers offseason, Brandon Ayuk. And we know how receivers are, Jose. I mean, and honestly, like, I don't blame him. Sometimes the theatrics kind of escalate things in getting paid, and it's just business. Like, we saw it with Debo. We see it with wide receivers across the NFL. It's kind of how they get these big contracts is becoming a little dramatic. For how quickly it started with Ayuk was a little bit eye-popping. I don't want to judge any of these guys coming off of a devastating Super Bowl loss. When my team loses anything of importance, I'll probably say some things I don't actually mean in the moment if somebody's asking me some pointed questions. But in your opinion, How serious is this? I mean, is there a chance we saw him play his final game in Santa Clara? Does this kind of head towards a trade, whatever, basically Brandon Ayuk's exit at some point here from the 49ers this offseason?
There's definitely always a chance, right? Once the 49ers pretty much traded DeForest Buckner, pretty much it kind of always set a little bit in the back of our minds that, okay, they can trade some pretty good talent that's, you know, viewed as a cornerstone, you would say. So yeah, it's definitely a chance. And then there's always also the salary cap crunch of, like, how do we fit this? We're going to have two highly paid wide receivers. Other guys, you know, can't keep kicking the can down the road because, you know, I mean, you could in theory, but then you're going to turn it to New Orleans Saints where it's like, we're still eating this cash from this guy who's 38 years old and he's a shell of himself, and that kind of sucks. So I think that's why, you know, if you don't view a trade with Ayuk, you're going to view a trade with someone else. And so I think I'm going to lean towards he's going to stay and he's going to get extended because you have to. You got to give Brock Purdy that, you know, elite receiver because he is an all-pro, right? So he is pretty much like borderline elite, if not elite. You want to keep him paired together for a good few years. So I think he's going to stay. You know, all those little, like, you know, announcements, like, it's typical. We saw it from Debo, right? We see it from every receiver. We see it from even other players. So it's something out of the ordinary. Why I think it's probably a little odd, but maybe understandable, is how hardcore he's already hitting the social media streets, right? It barely was a day, two or three, since the Super Bowl, and my guy is, like, sending messages through other people. He's doing his own messages, and it's like, damn, dude, like, your wound hasn't even sealed up yet. There's no scab there yet. There's no scar. So to me, where I'm taking that is, it's part like, hey, pay me, but also he's pissed off because he wasn't really a focal point in that Super Bowl. And he wasn't. Yeah. He had three catches for, what, 30 yards? That's not enough. Now, maybe on some of the downs he was getting locked up, sure. And I know I've actually read Ted Wynn of The Athletic, his magnificent article. They were actually showing double team and fake double teams, so that was confusing Purdy. But again, that goes back to Kyle Shanahan. Like, dude, find out ways to get him off that double team. Do ways to find the mismatches. And it didn't feel like Shanahan really focused anyone in his offense. He really kind of went widespread. Just said, hey, whatever's the coverage, just find someone. And it's like, no, like, when you have an all-pro player, an elite player, go to him a little more. Force feed him, you know? And then that way you dictate the defense to not fake double coverages. They are double coverages, and you can predict what they're doing with Debo and George Kittle and Juwan Jennings. But yeah, I'm not too worried about him. They got to get that deal done. And, you know, it's probably will come to the cost that one of their other top players, like maybe like a George Kittle or Eric Armstead or whoever, but it's worth it because he's at this point like a top five player you have to retain.
Absolutely. And, you know, if I'm ever unhappy with my current situation and I'm trying to get paid, you know, I'm going to be hitting up my guy Jose to post some stuff on social media. So the boss is at the top.
Tommy is pissed off.
Absolutely. You know it. We're talking to our guy, Jose Sanchez, here on Believe in 49ers. Just a couple more questions for you. Kind of put you on the spot here a little bit with these next two. But, you know, what makes the NFL offseason as a whole exciting is kind of all the surprises, right? I mean, there's always kind of something unexpected around the corner, whether that's a big trade or a team breaks out the bank for a certain player. Like, even, I would say, last year with the 49ers going after Javon Hargrave. I mean, that, in my opinion, that was one of the better free agents available. And the 49ers, kind of the rich get richer, landed him. When it comes to this offseason, do you kind of have like a surprise prediction, hot take you're sitting on, whether it's that's, you know, the 49ers chasing a big money free agent, trading a piece of their core, like we just talked about? Does anything kind of stand out to you that should get 49er fans maybe either scared or excited somewhere down the middle?
It's not a bad one. I think I'm gonna branch off of what I just said and someone they would trade. I think this is, look, 4 years ago after the Super Bowl, they traded Buckner, right? Because they were in a salary cap crunch. Someone had to get extended and stuff like that. And it's kind of close to that, if not very similar. So I wouldn't be shocked. In fact, I'm expecting one of those players to get traded. Now, off the top of my head, I would think Eric Armstead first. But who the hell is going to trade for Eric Armstead? I mean, he is an impactful player, but his body is breaking down and has been for the last two, maybe even 3 years. Plantar fasciitis showed up for him. He tore his meniscus. He broke his foot last year. So it's just, who's gonna trade like even more than a third-round pick for a guy who's getting played so much money and is always missing games or just, you know, just playing hurt? Well, I think someone they could really heavily look at is trading George Kittle. I think you saw in the Super Bowl that he was not a focal point at any point. I know he made that clutch fourth down catch, but outside of that, like, what do you do? Even in his pass run blocking, both of them, he was kind of getting punked. I know there's that viral clip of him, like, not finishing the block on George Karlaftis, that, and the fumble that McCaffrey gets, that he's over there chanting, like, hey, what's up, George? And look, I'm on the side, like, that's George's fault. Not saying he could have recovered it. I don't think anyone's saying that. But look, finish the damn play. Finish it. Why is everyone, Juwan Jennings and Brandon Ayuk, we give them so much credit that they're playing to and through the whistle? But when the whistle's obviously not blown, we're okay with George, like, just, you know, lollygagging for those 2 seconds towards the end. So, yes, George Kittle is on you. You should have kept your block on him. You shouldn't have been. This is the Super Bowl, bro. Like, I get it when you're laughing and you're pancaking someone. Like, that's what you're supposed to do. And, look, we saw in the Super Bowl that one tight end was impactful. The other one wasn't. I never again want to hear who's better between Travis Kelce or George Kittle. We just saw who is. And I get that Kittle can do both, but in a game where you really needed him to really take advantage of those safeties, he was nowhere to be found. The head coach didn't want to utilize him. And I think the fact that he's coming off an all-pro year, and he still has got a little bit left in the tank in him for at least 2 years, right? That it would put it entice someone to be like, here's a first-rounder. A second-rounder for sure, but maybe you package some of those. I don't know. Maybe you give him, you give him George and one of your thirds for their first. I think you could probably get that. Because George Kittle is still an excellent player coming off all pro year again, so I think that's where somewhere you want to look potentially for a trade.
And remember 49er fans out there listening, this is just a hot take prediction. This is just, so don't get too festered, because I know the departure of George Kittle would be heartbreaking, especially after coming off that Super Bowl. But yeah, I think that's an interesting name, because I think the 49ers might have to get a little funky here with their roster and the cap. I'm gonna kind of, you know, put a button on just our Super Bowl. Our off-season outlook, if you want to say. Jose, you know I love the draft and covering here for the 49ers. It's been a bit boring over the last couple of years because they haven't had a ton of picks. Well, for the first time in a long time, it's kind of flipped. It's the opposite. They have kind of an arsenal of picks heading into this draft, and we're still a few months out. Kind of, what's your early read on how you think? You don't have to list off players or anything like that, but how you think the 49ers will kind of attack this draft? Because they still, regardless of losing the Super Bowl, regardless of having kind of these cap situations we've just been talking about, this is still a elite, very stacked roster. They're going to be bringing a lot of these guys back. So it's not going to be room for, you know, 10 plus draft picks or whatever it is. Do they package some of these up for a player out there? Do they package it up for to trade up for a luxury pick? Kind of what positions are you interested in? How do you kind of see from 2 months, 3 months out, however far away we are now, how do you see kind of the draft for the 49ers?
Yeah, that's always kind of hard, right? Especially when you're picking like last in the round, basically. That's one thing about me always in the draft, that I give my hats off to you guys who are really hardcore into it. I think you know my friend Matt Holder too. Like, he's a big NFL draft guy. So it's like, the fact that you guys are able to predict that is probably the best skill in any type of NFL facet, more than even breaking down film. Because to me, I just like to say, like, I can project these players that I've been kind of read on. But to me, I think I'll speak from a sense of position and need, offensive line. You got to look at offensive linemen at any point. And I think the fact that they're picking last in rounds, that's a perfect time to go get those offensive linemen. Because, you know, interior is probably where they should look at, right guard, maybe even center, maybe even left guard. Maybe you can steal a tackle or trade up for one, a right tackle specifically. Because I think what I've seen from that Super Bowl is the Niners are probably a team that would benefit more from a very, very strong offensive line as opposed to a very, very strong offensive skill position array of players. Because that's pretty much what they have right now, right? They have an okay offensive line, and they have a very strong offensive skill set of players. If you flip them, I think they're more fit that way, because it'll make the run game much easier with McCaffrey or whoever's running the ball. It'll make it easier for Purdy to probably pick apart defenses and sit in the pocket, and then maybe you just let him scramble and make a play on his own. And then you have Kyle Shanahan, who can figure out good routes that can scheme guys open. You know, that's why he gets paid the big bucks. That's why he's quoted the genius, because in that sense, you don't really need, you know, those amazing receivers that you have. You could just get do by with just two of them and then a bunch of middling guys, or just one of them. So I would like to look at that with sense of who's going to be a guard that they can pick up, because right guard, man, is not it. You got Feliciano stepping in there. Spencer Burford has been treated like a basketball player with the rotation wise, which is so bizarre to me. So I think you're looking at there as number one. And then number two, who's opposite of Nick Bosa? It's not Drake Jackson. You know, God forbid you're bringing Chase Young back. He's just a guy. Those are easily the top two you're going to look at. It starts in the trenches again. You know, that's what they did 4 years ago, right? They traded Buckner, they invested in there, they signed people, and I think that's where and they got Trent Williams too, so I think it's the same thing. Build your defensive line, build your offensive line, sturdy those up, because honestly, linebacker is fine. Your secondary has always been fine. I know everyone cries about the 49ers secondary, which has always been fine to me. And your receiver, everyone is fine. Just literally, if you just invested everywhere there and offensive line, defensive line for like half your picks, I don't think anyone will complain. You need to find at least one good gem there.
I completely agree with you. I think it kind of starts and stops the draft stuff with the trenches. And here on Believe in 49ers, got a lot of exciting stuff coming up for the draft. Got some cool interviews with some prospects lined up coming up here for you guys to kind of shake away from that Super Bowl hangover. But all right, Jose, that was my last Niners question. But could not let you go without asking you one UFC question.
That's right.
Here on Believe in 49ers, usually before a big fight card or really any fight card, I'll give out some of my picks. The listeners here know I'm obviously a big jiu-jitsu guy, trained jiu-jitsu, and really, really excited for the fight tomorrow. In my opinion, one of the most stacked UFC cards in a long time, maybe as excited as we are for UFC 300 this weekend in Anaheim. I'm super bummed I'm not going. Feels like the first fight in California in forever.
Yeah.
24 hours away. Do you have any predictions? What's your feelings? Volk versus Ilya Topuria. I always kind of mess up his name. Robert Whitaker, Paulo Costa, Cejudo. I mean, Merab versus Henry is, I'm most excited probably for that fight. And that's like the third. That's like the middle of the road fight in this thing. I mean, Merab's a machine and just I'm the man. I can't wait for tomorrow. What are your thoughts? You got some predictions in you?
Yeah, I got some predictions. Those are, I forget you're a UFC guy, but I love UFC, man. I really want to start branching into my coverage in that, because it's like same thing with football. It's kind of tied neck and neck with football, though. It's so fun now. I've really loved it the last like 6 years. But, real quick, 298, 299, 300, those are three consecutive stack cards, insane. But the one in November was pretty stacked too, I'd like to think, the one against Yuri and the Pereira. And like, but anyway, I digress. So if I'm going, obviously off the rip, it's Volk, man. Ilya Topuria, like, look, he's getting touted because what? He like 10-8'd Josh freaking Emmett, like all five rounds? Like, come on. He didn't finish him. Like, look, credit to him, of course, he's a damn good fighter. But come on, that's Volk. The only reason why Volk's getting shorted, and I'm gambling, he's like minus 120 Volk, which is insane to me. It's like, wow, that's the best odds you're ever going to get Volkanovski in your life. And ones that he's likely going to win. It's because of he got head kicked KO by Islam Makhachev. And it's like, first of all, that was up in weight. He took it on 10 days notice. Like, credit to him for even taking it. He shouldn't have taken it. I thought it was dangerous. Still, it's like, look, I think anyone logically can say, that's a wash. You know, it's kind of almost like an NFL, right? Where it's, okay, you just played the Eagles, you know, high emotional game, and the next week you play the Commanders, and you come up flat. It's like, yeah, because who gets up for the Commanders? That's almost like a short game notice on a Thursday or whatever type of thing. So, yeah, Volk's going to take it out. And then your co-main, you got Bobby Knuckles and Paulo Costa. I'm surprised Paulo didn't pull out. I gotta go Whitaker for sure. I think he's going to get that back. And then Merab and Henry Cejudo.
But just as a fan, I'm rooting for Whitaker. I don't want, obviously, Acosta. I kind of agree with kind of everything you're putting out there right now. But Whitaker, he's the man. You know, it's hard to not root for him.
I think Whitaker's pissed off because him losing the DDP was insane to me. So I think he's a little pissed off to that. And Paulo Costa, I can't take him serious. I feel like he's really overhyped. Yeah. He's just more of a character than he is a fighter. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, Merab Dvashili against Henry Cejudo is crazy to me, which is funny. Watching the press conference, Henry Cejudo is claiming Mexico, and I'm like, hell yeah, bro, that's part of the Mexican delegation. We can claim you over Henry, because Henry just talks about America. Like, I mean, it's fine to be America, but it's like, bro, don't disconnect your roots, like disrespect Mexico and stuff like that. So, yeah, we're going Merab. And you forgot the other one, too. Jeffrey Neal, Ian Machado Gary is going to be a good one, too, I think. I think Jeff Neal's going to win that. Yeah, I just don't like Gary right now. I feel like he's shook. And you forget the prelims, too. The end of the prelims, Mackenzie Dern against Amanda Lemos. That's kind of decent. Nice little name to watch. Yeah, but, yeah, dude, I can't wait. I can't wait for this card. I can't wait for the Insui card. And then next week, actually, Mexico City. Brandon Moreno against Brandon Royval. Yeah. Yair Rodriguez against Brandon Ortega.
Brandon Moreno. Yeah.
Yeah, hell yeah. So it's I'm excited. So, so yeah, those are my picks.
It's gonna be awesome. I mean, in my opinion, I would say like Volk is probably one of my favorite fighters, if not my favorite fighter in the UFC right now. Just it's hard to not have a ton of like the guy's just a true warrior. You talked about him taking the fight on the short day notice. I mean, absolute stud. And then Merab is
no champion does that. No champion's ever done that, Tommy. I was like, god damn, like why discredit him for the knockout? Give him credit going up and wait last minute notice, like especially against,
and let's not like he's fighting the absolute like dog of the UFC.
Yeah,
it's not like he took that fight against a chump. Like he went and fought maybe the toughest fighter in the UFC right now. And then I would say Merab is like the guy I'm like must watch TV, you know, like he should be kind of in line for that title shot. Obviously if he wins this, you can't really deny him anymore, but yeah, I'm really excited, honestly, man. I think it's like one of the, and it works out perfectly, all-star break, nothing really going on this weekend. It's going to be a perfect little kind of start to the MMA 2024. I can't wait. It's crazy to think about everyone's talking about UFC 300, and I'm looking at this card and I'm like, man, this is as good as it gets. This is as good as it gets. So really excited. It's, obviously, happy to have you.
Wait, Tommy,
one of the reasons. Go ahead.
No, it's funny because all my family are diehard 49er fans. Like, I'm impartial to it all, right? I just like football. And it's like, they're like, oh, thank God there's UFC on Saturday that we can all watch together because I need a break from football. I hate football, all that kind of stuff. So it's funny because they're all hurting from the Super Bowl. So this UFC is going to be a nice little change of pace and forget anything that happened type of ordeal.
And when you know, I was even thinking about asking you to come on the show, I was kind of like, oh, I want to, like I said, I usually kind of end some of these pods before big fights. Like, hey, this is who I think is going to win. I'm really excited about this fight versus this fight. This is, you know, and so I was saying like, oh, well, at least I'll have Jose on because I know you're a UFC fan.
Yeah, what happens when you ask someone that's not a UFC fan? They're like, what are you talking about? Think you're speaking like Spanish to them or what?
I usually just avoid that.
Did you see both dressed as an old man? That was funny.
Hilarious. I mean,
perfect. He's relaxed. That's why he's gonna win.
Yeah. He's so likable. I do think Topuria is an absolute dog, but I mean, maybe not yet. Maybe not. I think he'll have his time eventually, but Volk is just, I'll never root against Volk almost ever. No. Awesome. Well, Jose, thank you so much for sticking around and talking some UFC to kind of wind down the podcast. Hopefully you didn't just skip through that and you got a kick out of it. And I think there is, like you're saying, sports, you know, after a tough loss, like I'm the type of guy when my team loses, I just want to sit in like a dark room. I'm not listening to podcasts. I'm not really watching sports shows, anything like that. And so kind of a standalone MMA card or fight card, whatever it may be, is kind of the thing that can kind of help walk you back into the sports limelight a little bit, because it is so exciting. It is a little bit of a disconnection. So it's kind of fun to talk about that here. Like I said, Jose Sanchez, you can follow him on Twitter at jsanchez, S-A-N-C-H-E-Z-F-N on Twitter. And you can catch all of his written work, videos with Sports Illustrated's All 49ers with the man Grant Cohn. You have to tell him how much I was hyping him up on this podcast spot. I haven't talked about it a little bit, so you have to tell him I'm hyping him up. But that's going to do it for us here in this interview with Jose. Thank you so much, Jose, for joining us on the podcast. It was great to have you. Great to talk ball. It's been a couple years, so it was really fun, man. Thank you.
Of course, Tommy. Thank you for having on. You know I can't say no to you.
Absolutely. All right. So that's going to wrap it up with Jose. Couple more minutes left here on Believe in 49ers. Going forward here on Believe, like I said, we're going to start absolutely hammering the NFL draft with some exciting prospect interviews coming up. We are also going to be talking about free agency and who I think will be the 49ers next defensive coordinator, all that and more coming up for you on Believe in 49ers. Shout out to our guest Jose Sanchez with Sports Illustrated's All 49ers. You can follow him on Twitter at jsanchezfn. You'll see me tweeting about him after this podcast drops. And like I said, like I always say, you can hit me up on Twitter if you want to talk some ball or some UFC. You got a prospect or free agent you want me to talk about or look at. And if you want to talk hoops, you know I'm the Golden State Warriors managing editor for USA Today's Warriors Wire. Thank you to our sponsor, Bet Online. We'll be talking soon. Believe in 49ers.